The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. Buckets of goals, some of them really quite funny in the Champions League as Liverpool and Real Madrid book their place in the final in Kiev. Liverpool concede four, but it doesn't matter as two away goals in the first half is enough to fend off Roma. And poor Sven Ulreich completely forgetting everything at the vital moment as Bayern somehow failed to get past Real. Also today, the final weekend in the Football League. Is this the end of the football programme? And probably something about Harry Kane. All that and more on today's Guardian Football Weekly Extra. We have a panel today. Paul McInnes, hello.
Good morning to you.
How are you?
I'm all right, thank you very much.
Nice to see you. Barry Glendenning, hello.
Hello.
Jonathan Wilson.
Morning.
Mark writes, what will Wilson's next show to watch be after Silent Witness? This is after your fantastic article in The Guardian about your spreadsheet.
I've still got a way to go with Silent Witness. I've still got six series to get through, so plenty of milk in that cow yet.
As they always say about box sets, I'm halfway through the Breaking Bad cow, if you're interested. How's your article gone down?
Seems to have gone down very well, thanks, yeah. Mm. What I have noticed is that fans of television detective drama seem rather less hostile than fans of football. So, you know, there's been literally no fans of Taggart going, oh, why do you never talk about Taggart? Like, no, nobody.
You've prefers. Got an agenda against Diagnosis Murder.
Yeah, yeah, none of that. No, NCIS fans. So, when we did this last season, you didn't talk about it. There's been a complete absence of whataboutery, which is refreshing.
Okay, that's nice. Anyway, we should probably talk about the Champions League semi-final second leg. It turns out the final will be between Real Madrid and Liverpool. These games were both very exciting. Were they good?
I enjoyed them immensely. It depends on your definition of good, you know, in terms of rollicking entertainment, sort of white knuckle ride. Yes, excellent. I love games like that. I suspect Jonathan Wilson, sitting there to my left, may disagree, you know, because some of the defending was absolutely atrocious, bordering on non-existent. All sorts of calamitous errors. Some players, you know, didn't front up and deliver when you would expect them. Hello, Robert Lewandowski. And although, is it that much of a surprise? But yeah, yes, I thought they were very good.
I mean, I thought the Real Bayern game was fantastic. I thought the level of, particularly from Bayern, attacking football was just really exciting, imaginative, fast-paced, intense. Liverpool game wasn't scintillating. I think there was maybe 10 minutes, that 10-minute period after Dzeko scored where it was like Roma really cranked it up and they looked like worthy opponents. I think by the time they got those two goals at the end, Liverpool, you know, everybody, the way Nainggolan celebrated, it was like everybody knew the game was up. But, you know, that said, it was, some of the stuff was ludicrous, and there were still sort of just moments that it made you kind of either chuckle or kind of, what's the sort of thing when you make an involuntary noise? Mm. And that sort of stuff.
Well, I wanted some positivity before I said, Jonathan Wilson, can anyone defend anymore? Is there any point in defending?
Well, everybody seems to have decided that there is none. Both games are just very strange. I can't. Yeah, I'm unable to process what's going on. Liverpool were 5-0 up in that tie and end up, I mean, not quite clinging on, but if it had been 3 minutes more of injury time, they would have been clinging on. And that's nonsense. You're 5-0 up, what are you doing? I can't believe how bad Real Madrid are. I can't believe how bad everybody is. I honestly think that, and you know me, I'm not some kind of tub thumping Premier League wrap myself in Union flag monster.
Why not?
But the best four teams in Europe this season are the top four in the Premier League at the moment.
Do we agree with that? Surely Barcelona are...
You saw them against Chelsea. They were dreadful.
Okay.
They were fortunate to get away with that against Chelsea. And they did not get away with it against a very limited Roma side.
The one thing about the Liverpool score is that I think when... You know, that I wonder about the aggregate scoreline in the back of your head. When you know that there are five goals, are you really going to play the same?
Yeah, and I think definitely there's a sense in the second half, having got the two away goals, so basically they've wiped out that bit of jeopardy, that there was a weird sort of tentativeness to them. That, you know, what they're great at, obviously, is those fast breaks. And even that, they kind of kept getting to the edge of the box and stopping and kind of going, oh, we've lost the ball. And there wasn't the same ruthlessness, there wasn't the same energy. And I think you're right. I think there was this sort of caught between two schools. Do we play like normal or do we try and just hold the ball? I mean, not very good at holding the ball, so don't do it. Just keep going.
No, that's right. I think there was also a sense of that forward. The forward three wanted to see if they could magic their way to a few more goals as well. They didn't. They sort of didn't wait for reinforcements. They didn't look to kind of work the angles. They just sort of thought, well, how can we... Is there a way that we can make this work? Oh, no, there's not one. Never mind. But going back to your question about the top four in the Premier League, probably yes, no?
It's an interesting point.
I'm sure that it's the Guardian man in you doesn't want to... would never want to say that.
Well, the thing about the Premier League is I've been focusing more on how bad so many teams in the Premier League are. Like, I mean, there are some atrocious teams in the Premier League. A lot of them are really bad. And there was the fact, you know, there were 11 teams worse than Everton. How many teams haven't got 40 points? I think it's 10. You know, that's really poor. But I hadn't thought about the top ones being better than their counterparts all over Europe. But, yeah, you could make a salient argument about it.
I think, you know, look at the way they went out. So City go to Liverpool, but I think City are better than anything else in Europe. United, just, you know, they should have beaten Sevilla. Clearly they should have beaten Sevilla. Some kind of aberration over the two legs. Yeah, I'm not suggesting Sevilla didn't deserve it on the basis of those two ties, but Sevilla just got rid of another manager. You know, they've been really poor this season, Sevilla. So United should have beaten them, and Tottenham were the better side against Juve and were undone by switching off for a 10-minute period in each game, which obviously you shouldn't do. Obviously it's not great to switch off for 20 minutes over two legs in which you let in four goals, but they were physically, I think that's it, that's the thing, it's the physicality, the pace, the tempo, it's everything that made English football great in the late 70s and early 80s is making them superior to foreign sides
in the
now.
way that NCIS Miami fans don't complain. Liverpool fans listen to this will be complaining about...
Sorry, there's no such program as NCIS
whatever
Miami.
It is. Liverpool fans will be complaining that they've got to the Champions League final and we haven't really unpicked how they've got there. Specifically last night, Sadio Mane seemed to be, from what everyone's saying, the man of the match, played very well. And him and Firmino haven't got as much coverage, Paul, because of how brilliant Mo Salah's been. But they are two huge parts of that triumvirate.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, for me, I'm a massive Firmino fan. I mean, I think, you know, the way he's turned into sort of like almost a classic English number nine, certainly with his back to goal, but just with just such kind of imagination and technical ability that he can do umpteen other things as well. Give him space, he'll beat you too with a trick, and you know, he can finish from anywhere. I think he delivers consistently. I thought, you know, when it went to 1-1. You just, and the ball got to Firmino, you're just like, that's great, you can just relax now, because whatever going to happen, he's going to complete the pass, he's going to take the sensible decision, he's a very clever player. Mane sometimes can be frustrating, I think, you know, he's got the raw power and the pace, but he doesn't always make the right decisions, and sometimes his finishing is a bit awry. But yeah, he dominated the game last night. He was the one who was really asking the questions, really sort of, you know, changing the nature of Liverpool's possession and pulling that Roma defence around. I mean, I think, you know, over the course of the tournament, we know what Liverpool can do, and it comes back to what Jonathan's saying with pace and power, but they do it in the final third of the field, just at a speed that is just difficult to kind of watch, never mind defend against.
In terms of player development, somebody who's improved consistently and looks like a better footballer every time you see him play, Andrew Robertson has been sensational, Baz.
Yeah, it's a remarkable rise considering he was relegated with Hull last season, and he took a while to get going, as we all know, and people were sort of thought it was a weird transfer, and then he didn't appear for a while, but he's really blossomed. His manager obviously has total faith in him, and if someone had said at the start of the season that Trent Alexander-Arnold and Andrew Robertson would be playing in Champions League final at the end of the season, you'd have thought they were insane. You know, I think Trent Alexander-Arnold had a torrid time last night. You know, Robertson was good again, but I think Real Madrid will have looked at Alexander-Arnold and identified him as a weak point. Occasionally he was overrun and there wasn't a huge amount he could do, but El-Sharawi really skinned him at times. And but I think he got his blood twisted. Was it against Crystal Palace earlier this season and bounced back? Was it Crystal Palace or Spurs? I can't remember. I think it was Palace. Wilf Zaha made mince meat of it. But he came back from that stronger, you know, so...
To add to Barry's list as well, you can add Dejan Lovren, James Milner, Jordan Henderson, Jeannie Wijnaldum. You know, all these players are not ones that you would sort of pick in a fantasy team necessarily at the beginning of a season, but they, you know, they've bested everybody in that's been put in front of them in the Champions League so far.
Which means, Jonathan, we need to give Jurgen Klopp huge amounts of credit.
Yeah, huge amounts of credit. I mean, I'm interested by what happens with Alexander Armstrong in the final. Assuming you play Alexander Armstrong.
Him and Richard Osman together. I mean, you'd play. You know, Osman would hold the ball up, wouldn't he? And Armstrong would be on the last man, I suspect.
Yeah, I'm interested in what happens. Assuming that Alexander Arnold starts the final, I'm interested by what happens there, because I think Barry's right that he was left isolated because Salah just stayed out of the pitch, and I think that was a deliberate plan. Leave him in the space behind Kolarov. Well, Marcelo's not going to do anything less attacking than Kolarov. So you then have, you know, potentially, depending how well set up, two, you know, four on each side sitting behind the fullback, and the fullback's trying to get forward, and absolute chaos on that flank with, you know, four players, none of whom are defending.
One thing I noticed, you know, because of all the goals we've had in the knockout stages so far, I just did a tot, and it was actually more last season at this stage.
Really?
This season in 28 knockout games so far, there's been 91. Last year, there was 97, compared to a derisory 66 the year before. So there was actually more in the knockout stages last season.
The Liverpool Roma game, there are more goals in that semi final in two legs than in any other Champions League semi final.
And producer Jonathan.
Time.
Carry on.
Since.
This is producer Jonathan's stat.
Well, I mean, he did email me, but I already had looked it up. So.
Okay, carry on then.
It's the first time that...
Is it the first time that two quiz presenters have played in a Champions League semi-final second leg? Oh, there was that time where Angela Rippon and and Brian Connolly... Anyway, carry on.
It's the first time that both sides have scored in both semi-finals, in both legs, since 1991, yeah. When Zvezda or Red Star beat Bayern Munich and Marseille beat Spartak Moscow.
Interesting Liverpool stat as well from Bill Edgar in the Times. Liverpool's past four games, the first 75 minutes, they're 9-2 up. In the last 15 minutes, they're 6-0 down. Klopp has, in these games, taken off attacking players, you know, with a lead and brought on a centre-back. And it really hasn't, you know, it seems to be something he shouldn't do.
Well, they actually blocked that channel more efficiently. I think when Klavan came on, the crossing that they were working out from Kolarov was nullified a little bit. But then they opened up space in the middle for... I mean, Nainggolan's effort was pretty good, wasn't it?
The two Roma goals at the end were both slightly freakish. I mean, Nainggolan smacking a ball as cleanly as you can strike it after a corner's half cleared, and then a penalty that shouldn't have been given. I mean, yeah, having said that, Roma probably should have had two other penalties, and Liverpool should have had a penalty, so... Of the four penalty decisions that Damian Skamina had to give, he got all four wrong.
So it evens itself out over a season.
And I don't think Roma should have had a penalty in the first leg. So, yeah, over the two legs, yeah, it does just about even itself
just
out.
Just a quick mention for Karius watching that ball as it sort of pings from one post to the other, yeah. Like a man trying to kind of get his dog in line.
It's quite amazing. Nice. Mero says, how should Klopp approach the last two Premier League games? Clearly the squad is fatigued. One injury pretty much anywhere might derail their Champions League hopes. They've got Chelsea and Brighton. If they beat Chelsea, then they're guaranteed top four.
If they draw, I mean, it'd have to be a massive goal difference swing. So I think you've got to take the Chelsea game quite seriously. And then they can rest people against Brighton. Plus they've got the FA Cup final weekend as a rest.
And what do we make of Jurgen Klopp's assistant disappearing and the rumours of Arsenal?
I think it's quite sad he's not there. Just on a human level, for, you know, they've been together 17 years and this is one of the biggest things they'll ever do. I mean, they obviously have had a Champions League final before, which they lost when they were at Borussia Dortmund. But I was thinking it would be a huge surprise if Arsenal appointed him and thought maybe, oh, he's just going to get a senior coaching position. But Arsenal do have form in the field of appointing people from left field. Arsene Wenger being a case in point. So,
is he 57, is he? The brain.
I presume he's around the same age as Klopp.
56.
56. Mm. I mean, that's quite, you know, if they're going for Sven Mislintat's sort of man to work as a, it's quite contrary to the prevailing trend of appointing a 25-year-old who's, you know, bang into his tactics box.
It's still that sort of German cultural background. Plus, you've got Bora Primac there, who is also Bosnian. I don't know if that's at all relevant, but I'd have thought Bora would think he'd have more chance of a job if he does come in than if it's somebody completely new.
Do we know the split of, you know, work between Klopp and Buvac? Do we know who does what? And
it's always really hard to tell with assistant managers, because it's a constant trope throughout football history that people always go, oh yeah, it's actually number two, he's a genius. And
Sammy Lee, for example.
Yeah, 99% of the time when they actually get a job, it doesn't really work out. I mean, occasionally it does. So I think Jogi Löw clearly is a better manager than Jürgen Klinsmann. Brian Clough was clearly diminished when he and Peter Taylor's partnership broke up. But you look at people like Brian Kidd or Steve McLaren. It turns out Alex Ferguson was quite good.
Finally, for part one, appreciate the amount of goals Liverpool have scored in the Champions League this season. Before the final's even played, they're already top, including qualifiers and everything. Liverpool 46 beats Barcelona's 45 in 1999-2000, Real Madrid's 41 in 2013-14, and Manchester United's 37 in 2002-2003. We'll do Real Bayern in part two. Welcome back to Guardian Football Weekly Extra. This is part two, everybody. Before we talk about Real Madrid 2, Bayern Munich 2, just to flag up our live shows. You're yawning, Jonathan. Are you bored or
no,
just
tired? Naked.
Okay.
It's late in the season.
It is. You're in the red zone.
I mean, I'm very much in the red zone.
But you'll be up for Copenhagen.
Oh, so up for it.
Next
Come
Thursday.
Come on, Silkeborg.
We are doing a live show in Copenhagen. If you are in or around Scandinavia, there are still some tickets in the wings. We are going to the cup final, which is, Barry, between...
I have no idea.
Brøndby and Silkeborg. Okay. Jonathan's supporting Silkeborg. Why?
Because I went there in 1986 and saw the Tollen Man. And it was... it stayed with me, the Tollen Man. A bloke fan of Pete Bug.
Okay.
I mean, really old one. There wasn't like some sad and witness crossover.
Did anyone get him out? Is he all right?
Well, I mean, he's dead, but he's pretty well preserved. I mean, he's been dead for 5,000 years or whatever.
I used to be quite fascinated with those, because there's a Piltdown Man in the UK, isn't there? When I was a kid. Something about the...
Oh, was Piltdown Man not the... Was that the hoax?
Was he a hoax?
Maybe it's not Piltdown. There's definitely one of them was a hoax, and... It was somebody who had kind of essentially made it look like cricket was played in prehistoric Britain by including kind of...
Speaking of hoaxes, there was a... This is slightly off topic. I read a brilliant article, which was in The Guardian. A wildlife photography exhibition winner had taken an anteater, a taxidermied anteater from the front of the park, picked it up and put it next to a tree and... covered it in ants and said, and taken a photo and won.
What gave it away? The plinth?
I think, the bronze.
It had a funnel sticking out of its backside.
Anyway, this is the sort of chat you'll get in Copenhagen next Thursday night. Please come and watch us, and we'll review the cup final and do some other things as well. And then if closer to home, if home is London, then the 22nd of May, that live show is coming along soon. Come along as well, and we'll do the same sort of thing and hope that you haven't been at the Copenhagen show. But if you're a devout fan, come to both of them and get a tattoo of Barry's face on your chest. Right, Real Madrid 2, Bayern Munich 2. Barry, were Bayern Munich unlucky, or how unlucky were Bayern Munich, or how the hell are Real Madrid in the final of the Champions League? Is it a witch's curse?
I'm loath to say it is a witch's curse, but... I mean, Karl-Heinz Rummenigge, the chief executive of Bayern, said before the game, you know, we'll need hard work, courage, passion and lots of fight and a bit of luck too. So, you know, we got the hard work, the courage, the passion and the fight. No luck whatsoever. I thought They were very unfortunate, but they were masters of their own demise to a certain extent. Sven Ulrich's howler to, you know, let Karen Benzema in for that goal was, I don't know what the hell was happening there. And I think the case for Robert Lewandowski being a flat-track bully seems to be getting stronger and stronger, because I think there has been criticism bubbling away in Germany of the fact that he doesn't deliver at the business end of the Champions League, and he really, I think, let his team down over two legs in this tie. And if he was doing what he's supposed to be good at, that they would be in the final.
I mean, Ulreich's error, you don't like to pick out individual mistakes to decide games, but it was just baffling, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a sort of... It looked like... I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why I don't want to ascribe too much about lacking luck, because I think, you know, one of the things which we're not talking about in those who's the best sides in Europe is that Real Madrid, in the moments, they make the decisive contributions to turn the tie in their favour, and they took their chances, they created them when they needed to, and you looked at Ulreich and you just thought, did you just get scared? Did you just think, I can't pick this up? I need to do something. What do I do? Panic, and
slide past it.
Yeah, you know, like.
But the weird thing was that he did appear initially to be going to pick it up. It was like it was 1992 in Sunday League, and a goalkeeper just, oh god, that loss is coming. Oh, and then complete panic.
Yeah,
but that loss, but you know, how old is Sven Ulreich? Was he born after the law came in? I mean, he certainly hasn't played professional football before the law. Hasn't played any type of football, I'd suggest, before the law.
But he also picks up the ball quite a lot. I mean, you know,
you're conditioned as a...
He was born in 1988, so his first memory may be pre-back pass rule.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a very, very good point.
The other thing is, like, Tolisso, why are you making that pass as well? And I saw Shane Duffy do something similar for Brighton against Huddersfield, when Brighton just, you know, if they won the game, they were definitely going to stay up, and they had a real kind of nervous day. And it's just one of those things, it's like suicide. It's just, you know, why do you do in that position with the opposition placed around your box as they are? Why make that pass and why not put it up the line? Just something.
Well, there's an obsession with keeping the ball, which is probably quite a good obsession, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose, Guardiola would insist that they continue doing that.
I mean, the pass, I take your point, I don't think he played the pass very well, in that it was bobbling and it was a bit of a sort of nervy stab of a pass, but it was on. If they wanted to keep possession, the best way of doing it was to give it back to the keeper. And then even if he just belts it forward, at least you've got a 50-50 with Lewandowski jumping with Ramos. Whereas if he tried to turn, there was a man kind of closing him down. Maybe he'd have lost it there. So I don't think the idea was necessarily the worst thing in the world. The execution of the pass was bad. And even after that, Ulreich had loads of time to kind of deal with it. You know, a professional goalkeeper should be able to...
On his Instagram page, he says, words cannot describe how disappointed I am about leaving the Champions League. We really wanted to reach the final. We did our best. And then this unnecessary mistake happened to me. I cannot explain it. I'm sorry for my team and for you, the fans. I mean, if he can't explain it, then none of us can. Real Madrid have reached their 16th European Cup Champions League final, more than any other side. Under Zidane, Real Madrid have never been knocked out of the Champions League, progressing in all nine of their two-legged Champions League ties, as well as winning the two finals they've appeared in. So we must credit them, Barry.
Yes, although it sticks in my throat to credit them. They clearly have this iron will to win, and...
Just definitely thought you were going to say witch's curse.
No, although Barney did reference...
White-shirted voodoo
in his article, but when I pointed this out to him, apparently I was missing a joke. I'm not sure what the joke was, but anyway, I'll leave it to the listeners to decide.
Matthew says...
I'm not suggesting for a moment there was any white-shirted voodoo, but yes, they may well have signed some sort of Faustian pact with the devil.
Matthew says, is this Real Madrid team the least cohesive team ever to get to the Champions League final, Jonathan? Even their defence relies on individual brilliance.
I think the Real Madrid 2 years ago was even worse.
Which was that, the Milan one? The one in the final in Milan?
Yes.
Against Atletico?
Yeah.
Okay. How is this better than that one?
just better. No, it's just, I think it's slightly more coherent. I think it's. I mean, I'm staggered by at how bad they are at certain basic things. But you know, they've got lots of great players, and they seem to get them out of jail. And part of that greatness is that capacity to not make stupid mistakes at key moments and to take chances when they turn up. But yeah, I mean, Marcelo's a great attacking fullback, but he's an absolutely awful defensive one. Imagine putting Marcelo in like the Huddersfield team. He'd be disastrous. Well, you'd play him as winger, wouldn't you? Wouldn't play him at fullback.
I just want to ask you, as the Guardian's football tactics whiz.
Wizard.
Sorry. Yeah. Wizard.
That was somebody on TV who wrote that. That had nothing to do with me, just to be clear.
Okay. This 4-4-2 that Madrid have been playing, it looked weird and out of whack, partly because they were playing a winger at right back, I guess. And then he switches to the 4-3-3, which is the sort of the formation that the BBC, that's more long-standing, and it looked more comfortable. What do you think they'll do in the final?
Well, I'd be staggered if he played a 4-4-2 against Liverpool. I think that would play completely in Liverpool's hands. I'm not sure. I mean, if they go with the 4-3-3, it means either Isco playing on the left or Bale starting. And I'm not sure that's what they want to do. So my suspicion is it'll be a 4-3-1-2 with Isco playing behind Ronaldo and Benzema. And Ronaldo then pulling left to try and get in behind Alexander Arnold.
Trivia time. James Rodriguez, the seventh player in the Champions League history to score for both for and against Real Madrid. Do you want to have a guess at who the other six are?
Luis Figo.
Incorrect.
Ruud van Nistelrooy.
Correct.
Steve McManaman.
Incorrect.
Raymond Kopa.
Incorrect. Play along at home.
Roy Mackay. I never played for Real Madrid once.
Incorrect.
Fabio Cannavaro.
Incorrect.
Zinedine Zidane.
Incorrect.
Oh, God.
Do you want me to answer them?
Ronaldo.
3 hours later.
Ronaldo?
Nope.
Both Ronaldos?
Nope. Beckham?
What was the question?
The seventh player, James Rodriguez, to score for and against Real Madrid in the Champions League. David Beckham, Alvaro Morata, Ruud van Nistelrooy, Fernando Morientes, Arjen Robben, and Ivan Zamorano. Did we like James Rodriguez taking, not celebrating, to the next level by apologising after scoring the goal?
Yeah, it was a classic of the non-celebration genre. He wasn't very particularly well treated at Real Madrid, and he's almost certainly never going back there, so I'm really not sure what it was all about. But then I suppose, you know, when you go into that cauldron, you want to be careful, don't you?
Who's going to win the final, Barry?
That is a very good question.
That's what I'm here for.
I can't answer. I really don't know. I would give both teams a very good chance of winning. You can make a great case for both of them.
And the weird thing about that, I completely agree with you, but equally, I think it could be 6-0 either way.
Not 6-0, 6-1. Can't see either of them keeping a clean sheet.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Yeah, fair.
What do you reckon, Paul?
I don't want to jinx it, but I think Liverpool might do it.
Do we want Liverpool to win it?
Absolutely. Klopp's Liverpool play great football.
It's not just that. It's there's a historical issue here, which is if Real Madrid win it three times in a row, that will cement them in people's minds as being one of the great teams of all time. They're just not. Yeah, history's got a responsibility to itself here not to let this happen. I know the Bayern Munich who were last team to do it. I know in 1976 they finished sort of mid-table in the Bundesliga and weren't a particularly good side. But what they'd been in 1974 and 1975 sort of legitimised that. This Real Madrid are deeply average. This Real Madrid have won two league titles in 10 years. That's not a good team.
Come on, Liverpool.
I mean, that's admittedly two more than Liverpool have won. But
right, well, in other European football, Arsenal go to Atletico tonight. It's 1-1. What's going to happen, Baz?
I don't know. I give Arsenal more of a chance than most people seem to, but they are Arsenal, and their inherent Arsenalness may see them Arsenal their way out of the tournament. But I would like to see them get to the final.
Atletico haven't conceded in their last 11 home games, almost 17 hours.
Yeah, well, Roma hadn't conceded at home in the Champions League before last night, you know.
Rules are there to be broken, aren't they?
Yeah. The way Chelsea pulled them apart in the Champions League early doors as well. Maybe is a good omen. I think there's a lot riding on Mkhitaryan, because that was at the Emirates last Thursday, and you know they deserved to win just about, and there was, you know, obviously classic Arsenaling involved that stopped that from happening. But their attacking play in and around the box wasn't that sharp. It could have been a lot quicker and a lot more precise. And I think, you know, Mkhitaryan has the ability to deliver that. I think there's a lot falling on Ozil's shoulders last week, and maybe split that responsibility.
They will play, whoever wins that will play the winners of the Salzburg-Marseille tie. Marseille 2-0 up. Jonathan, presumably that's done, that game?
Should be, but I mean, who knows anymore?
No, Arsenal will get past Atletico and then lose in the final against Salzburg. That would be peak Arsenal, I think.
It's interesting to see. I mean, because you know, the Wenger's last game at Old Trafford went exactly how we expected Wenger's last game at Old Trafford to go. Will he manage to do every single possible way to end in a peak Arsene Wenger style? Lose to Burnley, somehow lose sixth place, and then some...
Go down at Huddersfield on the final day of the season.
Get bullied out of that one. Get to the final of the Europa League and then just whimper out of it. Paul, you were in Lyon for the Women's Champions League. Talk us through it. What happened?
Well, it was a pretty... I mean, it was a second leg, the semi-final, 0-0 from the first leg. City went there to basically try and do the same thing, contain. And I think that was... It was reasonably effective, but they had absolutely nothing going forward. They were playing a false nine with Izzy Christensen, who's a nice midfield playmaker, sort of supposedly sort of dropping back in to make the mix, but actually ended up just chasing a lot of balls through to no great effect. Lyon have a lot of very talented players, and none more so on the day than Lucy Bronze.
It's a great finish, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a great finish and a really nice, nearly nice bit of play. There was a lovely little dink over the top, sort of like the Alexander-Arnold ball to sort of free up for the cross. And, you know, they're seasoned operators. They won the treble last season, Lyon. They're probably going to do it again this year. They got Wolfsburg in the final, who knocked out Chelsea in the other semi. Talking to Nick Cushing, the Man City coach, after... It's quite funny because to listen to a Manchester City manager talking about how, you know, we really don't have a chance when we're playing against a team with unlimited resources, but that they can just about make that claim in Man City women's, because they have a strategy of, you know, they're wanting to develop young English talent, and that's their idea, and it's working. And I think the women's Super League is getting stronger. The top teams are getting stronger, and looking at Lyon, they can see a model for how it goes forward, where the whole club buys into it. Jean-Michel Aulas, the sort of the owner of Lyon, who's a personality and sort of always conducting feuds with other owners in French football, he was right down there in the mix zone, answering lots of questions, happy to own it. It was the front page of L'Équipe the next day. That's where women's football in England wants to be, and it's slowly taking steps towards that.
How long do you think it will take to get there in this country like that? Or what do you think needs to happen for that?
Well, I think they could probably do with, you know, more television. You know, if Channel 4 got involved like they did with the Euros last year, that could help. A bit more TV presence, more crowds, better scheduling would help with those crowds. I was at the Continental Cup final, which is like the League Cup equivalent, and it was in Wickham on a Wednesday night when it was Man City versus Arsenal, and they barely got 2,000 there. There was about 12,000 at Lyon on Sunday. So there's some structural things, but, you know, the FA putting a lot of money into women's football, and they're really focusing on it, and it's obviously going in the right direction. Another thing that will help, obviously, is when Manchester United ladies play Manchester City's.
Manchester United got a team now.
Like a month ago they announced they're going to have one. Okay. It was the big missing thing in women's football, and now they'll be one.
It does seem to be getting a lot more exposure. Like I'm aware of it anyway, that there is seems to be a lot more, and people don't tend to sort of sigh wearily and just pay lip service
about the Premier League.
No, well, like sort of we used to do on this pod, and I think people are getting more interested in it.
Lyon played Wolfsburg, as you said, in the final, two of the dominant teams in women's football. In TV rights news, Sky have lost La Liga. And it could be shown exclusively over the internet in the UK for the first time. They lost it to 11 Sports, founded by the Leeds owner, Andrea Radrizzani. Don't know if it's going to be on in North Korea then, as Leeds United TV is. Is this a big deal, Jonathan?
I mean, yes, in that it suggests the diminishing wealth of Sky. I mean, my suspicion is that La Liga will still end up being on either Sky or BT. I think that's how it works. Certainly in Belgium, where 11 own rights, it's on the sort of the more mainstream satellite packages.
They license it back? Or?
Yeah, but I'm presuming they then show it online on their own service. So
it's 18 million a season.
Yeah, it's a lot of money. I mean,
they pay 10 million a game, I think, for the Premier League.
Yeah,
but I mean, what are the? You know, it's a very straight financial decision, right? So, how many people actually watch Spanish football? It's not the Clásico. You know, what are the viewing figures? I don't know, but I know that certainly for German football, a lot of the, you know, certainly some matches each season get an official viewership of nil because there's not sufficient people to register.
Sounds like many of the TV shows that I have presented.
So, you know, I understand. I mean, the Sky very nearly lost the rights last season, didn't they? There was it appeared they'd lost them and then they'd gotten back at the last minute somehow.
What, La Liga?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they ended up paying 18 million a season, which they wouldn't go and match this time. For me, I just think it's interesting about how we're taking one step away from that. Well, we're moving towards a sort of digital first type of broadcasting, and whether that means we'll get to an age where it's you pay for what you want to watch, or whether you continue to pay as part of a bundle.
I.e. what, season tickets for clubs type thing?
Well, yeah, or a season ticket for one league, another, you know, and the device, your phone is your set top box, and you have the, you know, different packages for different preferences, or whether you're going to have somebody like Amazon come in and say, okay, we're going to buy the Premier League rights and we're going to use it, you know, you get free Prime or whatever, you know, you play Prime Plus and you get it.
Yeah, I think what's interesting is children don't watch television.
Yeah.
And so for us, for old people like us, you know, the thought of, you know, sometimes I watch a game on the laptop when the future Mrs. Rushton wants to watch Bear Grylls The Island, and I don't enjoy it as much because it's not on the I'm not sitting watching the telly with the game. But actually, if you're 8 now and everything that you consume is through a laptop or a tablet or whatever, you won't, that idea of sitting and watching the game on the telly is not a thing for you.
And are you going to watch the whole game? I mean, I think that's another thing. It's like, you know, are you going to want to watch a game, or are you going to want to watch the highlights, or are you actually just going to watch the best skills and tricks from the game, you know, so you can talk about them? And I think that's what the digital platforms will be able to offer, is much more sliced and diced, you know, have what you want when you want.
It's interesting that other sports have, you know, shortened themselves all the time. You know, cricket goes, you know, 2020, and now this sort of 100 ball fiasco. And I know you said, Barry, that football should just be an hour long.
Yeah.
You wonder if in 20, 30, 50, 100 years, if it might be shorter.
Well, attention spans are... What was I saying?
Yay!
Attention spans are definitely getting shorter. You know, there's no two ways about that. And people are, you know, watching games while tweeting about them, and just... A lot of people obviously don't have BT because they either don't want it or they can't afford it. And they're getting their fix of Champions League football, either go to the pub and watch the game or just get the highlights on BT Sports YouTube channel. You know, you get a little 5 or 6 minute package, and which is grand, a bite-sized chunk of what happened. But... Yeah, I mean, you just wonder who's going to watch all these things. I mean, I used to watch a lot of Spanish football, but by the time Sunday evening comes around now, I'm kind of footballed out, and I'd rather watch a movie or something instead. I will miss Revista La Liga, which was a fine show. And won't someone think of Scott Minto and Jerry Armstrong and Terry Gibbs?
There was a, speaking of the way you consume, there was a picture doing the rounds, which is just... exactly what I do now, which is close the laptop to say, right, that's it, and then get my phone out to check what's happening on the small internet. Speaking of tradition, football programmes, the traditional match day programme, could disappear in the Football League. The Football League are voting on whether its production should continue to be compulsory. It's a commercial obligation currently for all 72 Football League teams to have a printed programme for every home game. Sales are declining, costs are increasing. Is there any point to it? I've seen a lot of people be very sad about this. It's the same
argument, though.
Well, I mean, I bought every programme that for games I went to at the Abbey, and I got some of them signed by Tony Dennis and Andy Fensom, and they were in a box for a number of years, and then I put them in the bin, and I'm okay.
You
know,
you tell yourself that. That's probably the best way to get through it.
But I mean, I have seen Henry Winter getting very upset about it, but amongst a lot of people saying, "Oh, this is the end of humanity and society."
I understand the nostalgia for it, I understand the affection for it, but I was slightly baffled to find out it was compulsory anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, surely that's something that it should be just market driven. That if it makes even a small loss, that's worth it for the club or some kind of marketing. But if you're losing huge amounts of money on it, why would you bother? I don't really.
It doesn't mean I don't. If I find an old programme, I'm excited, mainly to see some names on the back I can use for Culverhouse, Barry. But, you know, I do like an old programme, but there must have been a time in ancient Rome just after paper came in that people were like, oh, the wax tablet, you know. It's not the same, is it?
But, I mean, I don't care one way or the other, but, you know, there's an argument that it's a voice from the club to the fans, but, you know, all the clubs have websites now. That's their voice. They don't need the programme. And a lot of clubs are losing money on them. And, you know, you are obliged to produce, you know, leave programmes in the away dressing room. You're obliged to leave programmes to the match officials and that sort of stuff. But if they're not making money, why bother with them? You know, who cares?
We get given them when we go to games, yeah. Right? You can sort of, as you get to the stadium, journalists get handed a programme. I never look at it.
I always read the manager's notes.
Yeah, I read the manager's notes.
I'm not as diligent as you.
Sometimes they do it they put coded messages through them. But actually, you know, they are what, 100-page magazines usually? And there's bugger all in.
The coded messages, if there's actually anything there, somebody else again will have tweeted it before kickoff, yeah. So I'll still see it.
Yeah.
The best page was the player page to see who sponsored the players. Because at Cambridge United, it was, you know, Annabelle's Sandwich Bar sponsoring John Filan. And then it got down to the level where players were just sponsored by, you know, Jim from Basingstoke. You know, not even a company.
Also, statistics are better in programmes because they've got the double page spread. Yeah. So they show the teams every week who's been in. Whereas if you're on Who Scored or Soccer Base, you've got to click through to each individual match and you can't compare and contrast.
Yeah, that was nice to see a player who played every game.
Exactly.
You know,
and I think as well, another reason you don't need them now is because a lot of journalists, it's kind of like the football journalist equivalent of a humble brag. I call it a public service brag, where they take a photo of the team sheet and tweet it, when it's really just to show, look where I am. I think maybe I'm wrong, but
no, I agree with you.
I think Henry Winter's probably, he does that a lot, but I suspect he's probably over over showing people he's at football matches.
I miss those programmes now.
Too late.
That'll be for part two. In part three, we'll look ahead to the weekend's football, including the last day in the Football League and some big games at the bottom of the Premier League as well. Hi, everybody. This is part three of Guardian Football Weekly Extra. Thanks for sticking with it. Premier League this week. Friday night, Brighton play Manchester United. They're 5 points above the drop zone, Brighton. They'll be looking over their shoulder a little bit. United don't have a lot to play for, apart from obviously the FA Cup final in a fortnight. West Brom will be down if Swansea win any of their last three games, or if Stoke win against Crystal Palace, by virtue of the fact that Swansea need to play Stoke and Southampton in their last two games. What do we think, Paul? Stoke are down? Stoke beat Palace. I mean, it's just, what's good is, we thought about 2 weeks ago that this was all done, and now it's interesting again.
Yeah, I put the sort of remaining fixtures for the people who might go into relegation or escape from relegation, and I haven't put Stokes, which I think, I wrote them off a long time ago, and I'm a big Paul Lambert fan, and I think he's got them playing decently, but they're a striker or two. Like, they still haven't, he's only won one game in his tenure. They've got some battling points, but haven't really created much in the way of goal scoring opportunities.
Palace and then Swansea away, they've got.
Right, well, I mean, Swansea are in, you know, Swansea have Southampton first, which I think is going to be the key fixture looking at all the run-ins and ins and outs. But, you know, other thing that strikes me is that Huddersfield have Man City, Chelsea and Arsenal in their last three games.
Jonathan?
Yeah, I mean, so those two Swansea games that are key. And I don't know, if Swansea don't get out of this, then there's something gone badly wrong. We could not really ask for an easier final three games. And Huddersfield, I think, probably should just survive. Although they probably won't pick another point. But a home game against Arsenal on the final day. See, if it weren't Wenger's final game, you would think that was okay. You wouldn't mind Arsenal on the final day at home. But Wenger's final game, the emotion of it, the...
But then you look at West Ham, right? This game against Leicester is massive because then they play Manchester United.
Yeah, but then they play Everton, so...
Yeah, but they play Everton, but, I mean, if Sam Allardyce wants to do something, it will be to win at West Ham and send them down.
Yeah. No, that is true.
I saw Jacob mounting a sort of... having to mount a defensive Moyes on Twitter this week because it seems like some of the West Ham fan base are turning against him, and you know the performance last weekend against Man City wasn't great, but I've seen a few West Ham games this season, and I think they are capable of delivering a Premier League standard performance when they have to. I think, you know, Leicester are probably the league's least informed team at the moment.
Right, and seem to be playing to get Klopp well sacked.
Yeah. So I think there's a real chance for West Ham to go there, win, and just, you know, draw a line under it.
I think West Ham will beat Leicester. You've two managers there looking for a reaction in the game after they both got a hiding from in their previous matches. Leicester have a lot of previous in the field of trying to get managers they don't want sacked. And I suspect they're doing this again now. Claude Puel's future is in a lot of doubt, and I'd say they've down tools. West Ham, it should be quite easy for West Ham.
Andy Carroll has apologised and returned to training after a row with David Moyes. He was sent home on Monday after Moyes was unhappy with him leaving the bench early in Sunday's match against Manchester City. After Moyes made a triple substitution, Carroll headed to the dressing room early.
He probably had a creche to go and look after us.
It's possible. It is understood he was sent home after he refused to apologise on Monday. He's now apologised and the club consider the matter settled.
That's a good sign. I mean, I don't want to talk up Moyes too much, but you know, I think he's had a tough job here at West Ham, and I think he's been made tougher over the course of his time there. And I think particularly in terms of dealing with all the noise around it, he's done quite well.
Harry Kane news. Spurs beat Watford on Monday night. It wasn't a massively convincing display from Spurs, but they are, you know, odds on for the top four. Two things on Harry Kane. One was he talked about being upset that the FA had sent that tweet about him being in Chris Smalling's pocket and saying, you know, why the FA doing it? It was a silly tweet. More interestingly, is this report came out that England's medical staff are concerned that he is not as fit, he's not in peak physical condition. And everything coming out of Spurs says, oh, I'm fine and I'm great. And they say he's fine and he's great. But his key performance indicators, if you're interested, are down significantly on earlier in the season. His top sprinting speed in the past two games was the lowest it's been in 32 Premier League starts. He's averaging less than half the number of shots per 90 minutes since his comeback than he was before he was injured.
Spurs in general are looking quite tired, and I think that's a consistent thing with Pochettino teams over the years. I hadn't seen that thing about England. Where's that from?
I think it was the Times.
Because, you know, that's the second time, you know, Southgate speaking about Ali, about how, you know, he's been, well, not quite indulged by Pochettino at Tottenham, but, you know, needs more rigour playing for. It's quite unusual to sort of have the national side sort of briefing against a club side.
But, I mean, how much time do you need to be fully recovered as a footballer, given that the season finishes, May the 13th, and you've got a month where he's not going to do anything, is he? I mean, doesn't really matter, does it?
Unless he's carrying an injury still, then he should be fine.
Arsenal v Burnley. You'll be pleased to know, Barry, I played foot golf with four Burnley players on Tuesday.
Okay.
Do you want to guess which ones?
No.
James Tarkowski, Matt Loughton, Ashley Barnes, and Jack Cork.
All right.
Jack Cork was the best. They were all lovely.
Good.
Who won?
I was sort of comparing between them and four Burnley fans, and the fans won.
Okay.
Perhaps more importantly, Barry, it is Arsene's last game in charge of Arsenal at the Emirates.
Yes, it is. And I hope he gets a nice send-off. I thought the atmosphere in the first match at the Emirates after he announced his departure was kind of flat. I thought there'd be a bit of a carnival atmosphere, a D-mob happy atmosphere, but there wasn't. But we'll see.
Hmm. The Burnley players were saying it's hard to get tickets. So that shows you that a lot of people want to go and say goodbye to Arsene.
Well, I think there's a quite high proportion of season ticket holders there, aren't there? So that if they want to, it's usually them who are leaving the empty seat. Yeah, the atmosphere against Atletico last week, you know, especially when you compare it to the, you know, the your Liverpools and your Romas was, you know, it's a big arena. It holds big noise. And there wasn't much of it.
There never is, though, is
no, I mean, so I know it's
a cliche, but it's a cliche for a reason.
True.
Football League. Not much for Sunderland to play for, I'm afraid, Jonathan and Barry. It's the final day of the Championship, Sunday, 12:30. Cardiff will join Wolves in the Premier League if they beat Reading. If they don't, Fulham can leapfrog them with a win at Birmingham. Who would you like to go up, Barry, Cardiff or Fulham?
Oh, God, I'm going to upset people. I think Fulham are the better team, but if Cardiff go up ahead of them, they will deserve it.
The league doesn't lie, does it?
Well, it can mislead, you know.
But can it lie?
Yes.
Okay.
It is statistically proven that the league can lie.
Birmingham aren't safe.
I think every team would have to play each other about 10 times each for the league not to lie.
Okay.
Well, there's a mate of mine who is odd. But he was a,
more odd than you.
Oh, way more odd. But he was a maths and philosophy genius. And he worked out some way of... basically, he looked at form over the previous five games before each match to show that, you know, some teams just have a harder fixture list because you play teams who are in form at that time. Or you might have an easy fixture list, so you just keep playing teams who are out of form just by chance. And he worked out that to average all that out fairly, you know, to make it statistically fair, you'd have a season have to be 35 years long.
So the league table is completely...
Oh, it's a farce.
Yeah. Like that. You only really get, you know, you definitely... Most people would get two league campaigns in their lifetime.
Yeah.
You know, so if the first one doesn't go well, there's a lot of pressure on the second one, isn't there?
Compare that to... I saw an article on the Sunderland Echo website. Some kid in his little Sunderland romper suit... he's not even a year old yet, and he's seen Sunderland be relegated twice already.
So look, yes, Cardiff play Reading and Fulham play Birmingham, and neither Reading or Birmingham are safe. They've both got 43 points. Barnsley and Burton have 41 points. Barnsley play Derby. Burton go to Preston. Derby and Preston are fighting for the last playoff spot. It's all like it's scripted. So you could have one ground where everyone is happy and one where everyone is sad and falls to their knees at the same time. And at the other one, everyone's hugging each other in a sort of thing of joy. Bolton on 40 points play Nottingham Forest. They can still escape. Lots of frantic checking of Twitter for them during the games. League One is all 5:30 kickoffs on Saturday afternoon. On Tuesday, Scunthorpe beat Plymouth, which means they are in the playoffs. Plymouth can still get there. They need to win at Gillingham and hope that Charlton lose at Rochdale. Rochdale are currently in the final relegation space. They need to win and hope that Oldham lose at Northampton, who could themselves survive if Rochdale lose and they win by 9 goals. If Rochdale draw, Northampton need to win by 26 goals, I think. What I'm trying to say is, I think Northampton Town are relegated. In League Two, a draw is enough for Lincoln to make the playoffs. They host Yeovil. If they lose, then Mansfield can get the last spot if they beat Crawley. At the bottom, many apologies to Morecambe fans. A week or so ago, I said they were basically safe. They still need a point. Away at playoff-bound Coventry... Wilson, you have your hand up.
Yeah, Northampton only have to win by 25 because if they did that, they'd have scored more goals than Rochdale unless Rochdale's draw was to be 18 or more.
Thank you so much.
Pleasure.
Morecambe still need a point away at playoff-bound Coventry. If they lose, Barnet can survive. They are at home to relegated Chesterfield. So Chesterfield could go to Barnet and make them equally sad. So lots of fun things to look out for.
Speaking of Chesterfield, former Chesterfield superstar Kevin Davis has been sacked by Southport as their manager. National League North. He was doing a pretty good job. I think that's 11 managers they've had in 5 years now. I suspect the blame may lie with Southport's overlords rather than Kevin Davis.
We should also mention that some AFC Wimbledon fans have been pointing out this week that they are safe and MK Dons are down, and there is some sort of footballing karma for that to happen. But I, you know, think of the 10-year-old MK Dons fans. It wasn't their fault.
That is the, whatever it's called, the first time that AFC have like officially been higher than MK, isn't it?
And the AFC Wimbledon story is a great story, isn't it? From building up from absolutely nothing. Right, that'll do. Some goodbyes, some feedback corner. Peter says, my nephew got a Panini Russia 2018 trading card binder. To my amazement, not all teams have equal representation. Argentina, 18 players. Tunisia, 9. Is this outrage on a par with Barry having a sordid affair with the future Mrs. Rushton? He says. Seems a bit harsh on Tunisia, doesn't it?
32-team World Cup, I guess.
Interesting that he's gone for the ring binder instead of the album. If he would like to get in touch with me, I have a load of ring binder cards, which he's welcome to have, because I don't want them.
But one packet of the stickers, I got Iniesta and Suarez.
Oh, well done. Yeah. It's a bit like, you know, Tunisia getting 9. It's a bit like Football 87, where Scotland, you got... They had 2 players per sticker, you know, so they were just half the size Paul McStay compared to a full size Vinnie Samways.
Campbell Money was Jim Thistle goalkeeper.
Jim Philibin, here we go. Jonathan,
yes,
health check. You were attacked by a crow. We laughed about it on Monday, but you're here now.
Well, yeah, second time in 6 years in the same place. Yeah, it was horrible. So it was an 11-mile run. I'd done the first, 11K run. I'd done the first 7K, and it's along a cliff top, so it's, you know, yielding ground, it's undulating, it's tiring, and then you hit a hill. So anybody who's done the Great North Run, you know the hill you go down about a mile from finish and turn left onto the seafront. I went up that hill to the Marsden Inn, turned left to go up above a golf course, so then a shallow hill, then a steep hill again. So about a kilometre
climb. Just get to the crow, will you?
So I'm knackered as I just hit the second bit of steep climb. And suddenly this awful whirring of the wings, and then this scrape, and so, oh no, it's happening again. And then so you're so vulnerable because you're stuck on the ground and it's in the air. So it comes back for another pass. So you know, all you can do is sort of bend over, like wave your arms about and go, yo, fuck off, man, you fucking beaky twat. And then run for the nearest bus shelter, which is what I did.
Was it the same crow?
To be honest, I didn't get a good look at it this time. It was coming from behind me. I read a lot of Biggles books when I was a child, and the thing there was always to come out of the sun behind the enemy. And this crow, I guess, with a lifetime experience, possibly 6 years of combat experience, had nailed that. So it left a genuine like scratches on my scalp and a bruise just on the shoulder.
How old does a crow live? I mean, you've got to say, probably has lost a yard of pace in these 6 years, but up for it with experience.
Absolutely, yeah. If it was the same one, I mean, who knows? Maybe all crows are against me. Maybe there's a vendetta.
Maybe they pass it down, a legend from one generation to the next.
So I think there's between the cliff path and the road up through the golf course, there's a quarry, an old quarry. So I think they must live in there. And obviously, like, nesting season at the minute, so maybe they're a bit twitchier now than normal. But it's a residential street. You'd think it was used to people. I kind of, you know... It's not just me I'm worried about. I'm worried about the old people and I'm worried about the children.
I like how Macam you go when you're describing a scene that happened up there. And you can always tell how good a story is by producer Jonathan's reaction. His eyes have glazed over. He's just shaking his head. I think he wants I think he just wants to go home now. Hey, Jonathan, good to see you're alive and well.
Well, thank you very much. It's good to be here.
Paul, thank you.
Thank you.
Barry, cheers.
Thank you.
I will be back on Monday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.